welcome to All the Best. My name's Eliza Salas, and I'll be with you until 11 this morning. And on today's program, our stories from Sydney don't come to us on any particular theme. Instead, we're going to jump behind the themes of All the Best and behind the scenes of All the Best to meet some of the folk who've brought you stories on this show. Over the next hour, we'll hear some of the stories that we've brought to you, made for you over the last year, and meet their makers. Our show today will be bringing you three complete legends who have given hours, days and weeks of their time to this radio station. We'll see you very soon for one of our favourite stories from All the Best. Ice cream from Muscles here on FBI 94.5. You are listening to All the Best. We're on today's show. We're taking a look behind the scenes and meeting some of the people who have brought you stories over the last year. Around 20 people volunteer to make this show, and around 200 volunteers give their time to this station to keep it running. We do it because it's important. I reckon Sydney needs a radio station like FBI, and the more people involved, the better it becomes. I have joining me Nikita Agzarian.
Hi.
Hi. It is so great. I've never had you live in the studio.
I've never been live in the studio.
Your voice has been on this show for such a long time and a great part of the show as well, and it's great to have you here. Now, can you tell me how you first came to volunteer at FBI?
I guess All the Best was just starting, and I really liked the idea of being able to tell different stories from around Sydney and go out with just a recorder and record some amazing stories. In this great city.
Amazing. And the story we're playing from you today, we'll get to that soon, but what is it that you've enjoyed about being a part of All the Best and a part of FBI? Because it's a massive kind of community kind of thing.
There's just so many amazing people that volunteer here, and you just, in meetings and in the station, there's just always such a good vibe, and I feel like you can really become like, it brings the best out of you as a radio producer or as a person, really.
Now, this story of yours that we're going to play today, it stands as the only story on radio on this radio station that's made me ever cry.
Oh.
I shouldn't have said that. I feel like it's okay if you're listening and you don't cry. But it is. But can you tell me, it was part of our How I Came to Sydney episode, which was it was mid last year, I think.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a bit about how the story came together?
I just really wanted to explore how my family are immigrants, and I didn't actually grow up in Sydney, and I moved from Wagga, and I always kind of was in this whole country kid mentality. And then I kind of started digging into why my grandparents decided to move my dad to Australia. And I never really asked that question, and it never really was talked about in my family. And my dad was actually overseas at the time that I recorded this story. And so I kind of probed my auntie, who didn't realise it was a radio interview, that I was doing a story in print. So when it came to producing it, she was like, oh, I didn't realise I was actually going to be broadcast.
Oh. I think it's an incredible story, and I feel really lucky to be involved in a show that can bring this story. So I might pass over to you and get you to intro it if you don't mind.
Okay, so in the 1960s, a time when the future of Egypt was pretty uncertain, my family decided to pack up and head to Australia, a completely unknown territory. And like 40 years on, I finally decided to ask my dad and my family why they came to Sydney. Growing up in country New South Wales, ethnic diversity consisted of the Chinese restaurant and the Indian doctor. So I really wasn't given a chance to explore my heritage. My dad was bashed in high school for being a WOG, whereas I took on the nickname WOG and thought nothing of it. I was the most cultured person in my year. I could say Insha'Allah, Arabic for God bless, Je ne comprends pas, I do not understand, and Kadab Shwabs, which I always thought was Arabic, but now I realise it's just something that my dad made up when he tucked us into bed. It wasn't until I moved to Sydney that I was actually confronted with the fact that I indeed knew nothing of where my family came from. I've always known the main details.
My dad was born in Egypt and came to Australia in the 60s. I know that my family had amazing life in Egypt. My grandfather, Joseph, managed a bank and they had maids and drivers and they used to entertain consulate officials. But they gave all that up to come to Australia. I asked my Auntie Marie what that was like.
A lot of people, when they left Egypt, took their money with them, but we couldn't take our money with us for some reason. The government put a hold on our resources. And when we came from Egypt, all we had was 20 boxes. And my mother, God bless her, had packed sheets, linen, pots and pans, sugar. You know what you're going to get in Australia. So we had tins of sugar cubes, absolutely everything that you could think of. And whoever helped them pack, they packed 20 huge, I don't know if you've ever seen the cubic boxes, but they were made so that when we arrived in Australia, the two boxes could be put together and there'd be a bed. So for the first 12 months, maybe, until we could afford it, Michael and I put these two boxes together and they were our bed.
My grandma was an amazing woman. She spoke three languages. She could sew anything. She cooked amazing traditional food, literally from scratch. She grew all her own fruit and vegetables. I remember when I was little, my parents let me take time off school to go up to Sydney to help grandma prepare tabbouleh, walla anab and kuk for family events.
She'd never sewn anything. She always had people, you know, she had servants to sew for her and for cook for her and garden for her, and so did my dad. And when we came to Australia and we bought this house, you know, in the middle of nowhere with nothing, they both just did it. You just pick yourself up and you do it, you know. There was a big garden, so she planted food. My dad was every Saturday and Sunday. I have really vivid memories. We would spend the whole Saturday and Sunday working in the garden, planting tomatoes with my dad, stringing up the tomatoes, planting the grapevines. It was a constant Saturday. And Dad would just reward us with a block of chocolate. That was Cadbury's chocolate. On Saturday afternoon, when you absolutely zonked and you spent the whole weekend working in the garden. We were wogs. We were really wogs. You know, the only house in the neighbourhood with, you know, bloody tomatoes and grapes and lemons and limes and all that kind of stuff. But that's just what we did because you didn't know any better, you know.
My mum was born in Albury and she's a gun at family history. She's documented everything about that side of the family in huge folders. But not only that, my mum is so open about her family that even though my nan and pop died when I was young, I feel as though I know exactly what they were like, down to the last details. I know that my pop always saved his meat to the last on his plate, and that the photo of Nan that's in the TV room is her favourite because it made her look like a movie star. But my dad has never been that open. I realised when I started working on this story that I've never asked my dad or anyone in the family what my grandfather or his father was like. So I asked my Auntie Marie for the first time this weekend.
Well, first of all, what I know of my grandfather, which is your great-grandfather, my mother's description of him was he was really a gentleman. He must have been because she lived like she agreed to have her father-in-law live with her, like he lived with them, which is kind of not unheard of, but my mother was a very strong-willed woman. And I don't think she would have tolerated anybody who was less of a gentleman than my grandfather was. But my dad, he was quiet. He had a sense of humour, a really quiet sense of humour. He was well respected and he worked really hard because it was a huge thing for him to leave a position, you know, like a bank manager is been on a par with a doctor or a lawyer, like a fairly well-regarded person. And there's status associated with that. There's money and resources. So, like, we had servants and a driver and a very well, you know, a house at the beach and a house in Heliopolis. And it's kind of like the Paddington of Cairo to live in Heliopolis. So with all that kind of status and wealth, he always believed that if he came to Australia, he would at least get a job in a bank because that's all he ever did. And I think it was a real shock for him at the age of 41 not to get the work that he thought he would be able to get and to kind of go cap in hand to the Barclays Bank in Sydney and for them to say, no, sorry, we don't need you. So I think that that was a real trauma for him. But he kind of rose above all that. We were always protected. You always knew that, you know, he wasn't really happy. He was the peacemaker. My mother was really stubborn and strong-willed, and he was always the peacemaker. Whenever there were arguments between John and Eli, it was my dad who kind of made the peace.
When my auntie said this, it kind of threw me back, because to this day, whenever me and my sister are in a hint of an argument, my dad will call us up from Wagga and try and sort it out. After hearing all this, I became more intrigued to find out how my dad felt about his father and his decision to come to Sydney. My dad, Michael, is away in Sweden at the moment, so I emailed him a simple question. I want to know what your dad was like. And he wrote back last night. Dear Keita, the thought of packing up one's lifelong roots and moving to another country seems an amazing act of selflessness, enormous sacrifice, and unbelievable courage. Yet, in his 14 years in Australia, my father never faltered, even when he endured amazing difficulties, bigotry, racism, and the ignorance that comes with that. From bank manager to accounts clerk, from being the boss to being boss, what my father and mother endured in those first years in Australia are unimaginable. And yet I think it would be harder today. I think there's a lot less tolerance today. It's strange, but in some ways I feel that his devotion, love and dedication to his family attributed to his ill health and early death. My father worked hard all his life, never complained, never got angry, and was there when you needed him. Keita, I miss my father very much, especially when I got married and at the birth of you and your sister. But oddly enough, I miss him more as I've gotten older, probably because I'm seeking advice or guidance. Is there anything else you need, or is that all right? Love, Dad.
Nikita Agzarian, on behalf of her dad. You are listening to All the Best, where this morning we are serving up all you can eat. Or trying to. Every year we run a supporter drive, which is traditionally the time where we encourage you to support the station. We run on the blood and sweat of hundreds of volunteers working their asses off behind the scenes. Joining FBI is about making a statement in support of independent radio and becoming part of a community of people dedicated to Sydney music, art and culture. Coming up very, 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 very soon, we'll be joined by one person who I reckon is one of the longest volunteers of this station and one of the most amazing. She's coming up and bringing a story of hers as well. To get us there and to get you in the theme for All You Can Eat, here's Ham and Eggs from A Tribe Called Quest.
Can't we make you see? I mean, the factor is the key. I mean, devoted to the arts of moving, but so get on up and think about what's yours. I mean, your culture and your laws. I mean, I'll label you a sucker if you're dumb and just stay dumber, but stay in line and keep moving.
You are on All the Best on FBI 94.5. Eliza Salas is my name, and we're bringing you a smorgasbord of the stories we've made and played for you over the last year as part of our All You Can Eat supporter drive. Joining me in the studio right now is a volunteer of FBI who puts us all to shame, I reckon. Julia Thomas, oh, you're looking at me with a I don't know what, you know when your lip goes all funny? Jules, I can't even begin to introduce your involvement with this station, but I'm sure listeners would love to know.
I guess I started out probably about 6 months before we came on air. There was a notice that went around uni, and so I turned up to the FBI office, which was a corner desk in someone else's office at the time. It was kind of three staff members, and I remember like Sam Lim and Linda Mariano kind of with piles of CDs taller than them all around them, and that's all FBI was at the time.
And then 6 months later we launched this incredible station.
We came on air, and yeah.
And God, that's almost 8 years ago. Wow. Whoa. And so since that time, you've been involved in various different ways. Can you outline a couple of the different ways that you've helped out here at FBI?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I produced Arvo's. I was on the board for a while. I then came and worked here for a while. And now I'm making stories for you and all the best.
And what is it that keeps you?
The people, probably. Yeah, the volunteers around the place. And the ideas that people come in with and, you know, decide that they want to bring to the station. So, I mean, even just this week when there's a supporter drive on, which is a massively intensive thing to put on. You know, there's volunteers here kind of from 6 a.m. right through till the night answering phones. And these are all people who come and do this, you know, 6 till 9 a.m. shift before they go off to work or, you know, squeeze something in between uni classes. So there's this going on. But this week as well, I mean, you broadcast live from the Writers' Festival or you recorded a live show there. Canvas is live at the Art Gallery of New South Wales tomorrow. FBI Social has amazing gigs on pretty much every night of the week. Fire Up is doing another State of Origin event next week. And there's all these things put on mainly by volunteers at the same time as they're doing all their other shows and having their other lives. And I don't know, that's kind of a pretty amazing thing, I think.
I've never thought about that, but you're right. Like, it's FBI just seems to be Sydney right now. And it's amazing. It's an amazing city to be in because I think because of this incredible station.
Well, and everything that those people are doing, and they're incredibly different things. You know, you've got the live feed team recording gigs out all across town, but they're all doing things that they're really passionate about to make their city better.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that kind of really amazes me.
Jules, I have brought you in here to tell us a bit about a story that you made for All the Best more than a year ago now, which is incredible for a show that's not really been around for that long.
Yeah.
I even think, was it your first story?
Yeah, it was the first one I think that I'd done for All the Best. We'd probably only been on air a very short time, and it definitely wasn't a story that I was meaning to make. Like, it was, you know, I had ideas for kind of planned stories in my head, but I remember one day I was talking to Stuart Coop, who presents Tune Up here on FBI, and he was kind of telling, he was like, the weirdest thing happened yesterday. This guy was, you know, this musician he was working with was playing at Blues Fest, and the Swell Season came up, fell in love with him, and wanted to fly him to Sydney to play at the Opera House in the concert hall with them. And it was just one of those moments where you're like, if I can get a microphone there, like, we have to be there. So, yeah, I kind of scammed my way in and joined them for the ride, which was kind of amazing because not only had LJ the musician, had never played in the concert hall, he'd never been in the Opera House. So, you know, I met him at Circular Quay, he got off the train there and we kind of walked around, and you can kind of see it just dawning on him as he walks around the corner, and this thing that is, I think, one of the most recognised, you know, landmarks in the world. And he's like, I'm playing in there on the biggest stage they've got.
Without further ado, I would like to introduce to you via the words and work of Julia Thomas, LJ Hill. Thanks so much for coming in, Jules.
Thanks.
I met the Swell Season. I'd never heard of them before, and because I don't, you know, get right into the big rock scene or the music scene, and apparently they're a Grammy Award-winning band. They're from Ireland and from different parts of the world, and I've never heard them yet. They saw me play, they came to my gig.
Before we go any further, let me paint you a quick picture of LJ. First of all, he's huge. An ex-boxer and rugby league player, he's now got this incredibly slow and deliberate way about him that makes you unconsciously change your pace to suit his. With long, straight, grey hair and a face you can really only call weathered, LJ Hill's a pretty arresting sight. Think Robbie Coltrane playing Hagrid in Harry Potter and you might come close. Markéta Iglova, on the other hand, is tiny and young, with this really beautiful quietness about her that seems to complement LJ perfectly. She was the one who stumbled across him at Blues Fest.
I was walking towards one of the bigger stages and there was like this really loud, you know, rock music coming out of it, which didn't appeal to me and didn't seem very exciting, so I didn't, you know, bother going in. But just barely breaking through that really loud noise, I could hear something that caught my attention. I wandered in and LJ was playing on stage. He was by himself. It seemed so pure, you know, just him and a guitar.
Well, as soon as you finish your gig, they rush you to the CD signing tent in the little cart like they do in the movies, and you go to the CD signing tent.
So I went and I bought a copy, I got it signed and some more copies because it was the kind of record I wanted to buy for everybody I knew, you know.
And Marquette bought one CD, and the other fellow, the band member, bought one, and they didn't know that they were both buying the same one, and I thought that was very freaky. Two people from the same band bought my CD, and they were really impressed with it, they really liked it.
Glenn heard the CD later. We played it that night. We were hanging out in our hotel and we were playing it, and Glenn got really excited, and he has that real, you know, get up and go. He was immediately like, we should get in touch with him and get him to come over and sing a song with us.
And then they had previously been booked to come and play at the Opera House, and they invited me to come along and sing one of my songs, and they were going to sing harmony with me and play guitars and all that for me.
Hey, LJ. We're sitting here watching the band soundcheck, and we're sitting on the stage at the concert hall. What's it like to sit out here?
It's really beautiful and serene and very spiritual. It's very sort of like, you can imagine how that other fellow from England, Captain Cook, would have felt when he came here, but he probably didn't feel the way I do now, you know. It's just magic.
It's not only at festivals where things happen like the movies. After soundcheck, I walk back down to the dressing rooms to find LJ jamming with Colm, the Swell Seasons violinist.
You know, the 18th
day of May,
that's my birthday.
Yeah. Very easy song to play.
Great, wait till I get my fiddle.
Gonna get his fiddle.
How you feeling?
I'm feeling good, yeah. I'm a bit nervous, but that's good. Yeah, very, very excited, very happy. Just awesome. You know, it's I know it's a word everybody uses, but wait till you see and you're standing in awesome, then you know what it means.
Yeah. Hey, so it is my great pleasure to introduce you to somebody, and it's been an amazing way of meeting this person on this trip, part Aboriginal, part Cherokee, and part Irish. It's an amazing combination, and please welcome LJ Hill.
Thank you. My great-grandfather was Irish, and he instilled a lot of cheekiness in my father. My father was a great magician. He could walk down the street and turn into a pup. Called the Pretty Bird Tree. It's an actual tree in Narrabri. It's an actual stump in Narrabri. The council took the tree down. This is my first time at the Big Opera House. I should ask somebody about this one.
Okay, so it's after the show now. How was that?
Oh, I'm going to try and find some words to describe it. Very enjoyable, very happy, very rewarding.
You were telling jokes up there, though. You didn't want to leave.
I like to be happy, and because there's too much gloom and doom in the world, and there can be too much doom and gloom in my world, but I like to share jokes because laughter also is a universal language.
And there were people all around you. Could you see them all when you walked out?
Oh, yeah, I sure could. There were a lot of white faces in dark places up there, meaning that the lighting was really, really heavy and deep.
And back to Armidale tomorrow?
Yeah, back to Armidale tomorrow on the old Greyhound bus to go home to my little four-legged family. I got two cats and a dog, and it's a wonder. I'm very surprised the dog hasn't sent me a text message yet, so I have to check my phone. There might be a text on there for me dog.
More than a year ago, LJ Hill from the Sydney Opera House, live on stage at the Sydney Opera House, as produced by Julia Thomas, one of the longest-serving volunteers here at FBI. And what an incredible person, an incredible story as well. Stretch that flesh. Show me your teeth. Oyster from the incredible Oscar and Martin, one of the bands we brought to you in the last couple of weeks as our album of the week, bringing you music from right across Australia, music that you mightn't hear otherwise. You are listening to All the Best on FBI 94.5. Going to leave you now with a track from Beck fitting in with our All You Can Eat supporter drive. This would be a nice dessert, peaches and cream.